Hello and good afternoon, good morning, good evening, bienvenido, wherever you might be in the world. This is your girl, the Wailing Wall. And though we have no guests today, we are still going to continue the conversation on homelessness and homeless engagement. And today I just wanted to share a little bit of my personal story. And it's a story that's not very uncommon, but it shouldn't be common. So my story begins in 2011, and I was in the midst of a divorce at that time and struggling to maintain, and through it, lost my home. And at that time, I still had two children with me. My son was in high school, and my daughter was getting ready for kindergarten. No jokes. And I was going through a very strong, bitter divorce, as well as mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual stress, strain, and drain. Well, when the divorce was decreed final in 2012, and we had officially lost possession of the home behind the divorce, and my children and I had nowhere to go, staying with family was not an option, as they were a portion of the reason why we lost what we lost. So, being a prayerful woman, a very spirited woman, I sought God's direction. Part of me wanted to go back to familiars, where I lived in Daytona Beach, Florida for a period of time, and I was familiar with the area, and I knew how to navigate and maneuver, but that was not the Lord's plan. And it's difficult when you make a plan and plans change, and you're unable to unchange the changes. We all go through that, don't we? Well, we think it out and we think that we have it all the way thought through, and we start maneuvering in that direction, and then we wonder why everything gets shut down and things become difficult, and it's like you're at a great impasse where you just can't move to the left, to the right. You can't go forward. You can't go backwards. You're just like stuck in the middle. You know, you're really just compressed and compacted, and to the point where your stress cracks start leaking. Well, that was where we were. And the Lord led us to Dallas, where we began our homeless journey as a family. Now, I will say this. As a single mother, one of the second worst things in the world to losing your child is not being able to provide for your family and being stuck out in the wind like a sail flailing. And that's pretty much where we were. I was stuck trying to keep three bodies afloat. And being that we had come from a different state, a lot of things we just did not have. We had clothes in our bags, clothes on our backs, and what little bit of paperwork I was able to salvage from the, from just loss. I mean, we lost. We lost possessions, we lost paperwork, and trying to get all of that, and that being that the only income that I had was the child support that I was receiving for my youngest child. So, in the midst of it, we ended up at the Dallas Life Foundation. Now, everybody's shelter experience is different. And the disclaimer in this particular portion is I'm not putting down the shelter. I'm putting the system down. Everybody's experience in the shelter is different. Everybody's mindset when they enter a shelter is different. Everybody's capacity to deal with certain situations is different. Our experience was horrific from the moment we arrived to the day I left after having had to send both my children away from me. I left. It was just very, very, very difficult, and the amount of disrespect one could receive and the lack of assistance, and being that the only income that I had for the three of us to survive was being ripped away from me in order to have somewhere where the three of us could stay together because of my son's age. Him being 18 at that time, he was a senior in high school. He was just finishing high school. And no one would take us because of his age. And as he was still in high school and a budding young man, I didn't feel safe putting him into a shelter with other grown men where the risk of being raped, beaten, robbed, and no one doing anything about any of it. You know, the risk was always there, so I did not feel safe. Us, when I say us, my daughter and myself, and being in one shelter and my son being uncovered in another shelter where there was nothing I could do to protect him from anything or anyone. So we entered into the Dallas Life Foundation. And being that this was our first homeless experience as a family, as in my youth, I had experienced homelessness, but that was homelessness with just myself. But when you have children, it's very, very different. Very, very different than when you are a single individual. Trying to maneuver and live life as a norm doesn't exist because you're trying to minimize the impact of the trauma that is inflicted towards your children as well as yourself. And the way that women are treated in a shelter and the way that men are treated in a shelter is very, very, very different. The way that families are treated in a shelter versus a single individual is equally different. If you are a single parent family, you are not treated with the same level of respect as you would be with a dual parent household because they don't want to come up against the male figure of that house. You know, and so to continue, being at Dallas Life was hard, being that I had a young child and I was trying to find stable income, but I could not get help with child care because I would not enter into their rehab program. And it's sad because not all programs fit all people. I did not go into the shelter with a drug problem. I didn't have any mental health problems. I didn't have any physical health problems. I went into the shelter just simply seeking asylum for my two children and myself, just somewhere we could lay our heads. And being that I had an income, I had to pay to stay there. And at that time, it was $7 a night. Now, recently, it's gone up to 12, I believe. There are people paying $12 a night just to stay at the shelter. And when you have a limited source of income and you're trying to get your financial bearings so that you can get out of homelessness, it's very discouraging when somebody is robbing your pocket in order for you to have somewhere to stay. And compare it to that of, well, if you were staying in a hotel or a motel, you'd pay them. So why shouldn't you have to pay us? You shouldn't have to pay a shelter because they are funded for you to stay there by other entities, be it government or private. There are people who pour into the shelters specifically for people to be able to stay there, gather their financial bearings, and move out and establish themselves a firm foundation. If you have but one income and you have to pay to stay somewhere, your savings aren't going to be that much, and it's going to be an extreme struggle to try to get your financial bearings in order to get out there. So fast forward, I sent my son to Job Corps, and I had to send my youngest to my ex-husband. Now, in doing so, I ended up in a long 6-year now long custody battle to regain my daughter now that I've been housed. That was the most painful portion of the journey, was having to send my children away. But I knew that I couldn't carry on, and I didn't want us to stay stuck in the shelter, being that she was only 4 years old at the time, and I did not have assistance with childcare for someone to watch her so that I could go and work. And Dallas Life refused to help me because I would not join any of their programs, because at that time, with the way the programs ran, if you were a pay-to-stay client, you were not eligible for any of the help assistance. And I should have been, just because I had a young child and I needed to find additional income. Selah, we move forward. I jumped into an apartment with what little bit of income I had, and it was one of those $99 deals, and I was desperately trying to find a job so that I could pay the next month's rent, and ended up getting evicted the very next month. It happens. And it made it me emotionally feel very inept, very distraught, and I was very hard pressed. And at the same time, I was trying to help another family get their financial bearing straight so that we could all move forward, and all everybody get their own. And the thing about helping, when helping hurts, is when you don't have yourself established and you're trying to take on somebody else's issues at the same time. It's very difficult to do that and keep your boat afloat. Hallelujah, right? But the lesson learner was, even though you see a need, you have to pinpoint where your actions can really create the greatest impact without taking too much away from your table, because your family still has to be provided for. So that began the homeless journey. And as I went through, again, when I lost my first apartment, because I lost two more after that, but when I lost my first apartment, I felt very, very low. I was very suicidal. And this is the place where a lot of people lose hope, lose faith, and you will find people just dying on the inside. And their lack of mental stability decreases. Fast forward again, multiple in and out transitional homes, in and out different programs, in and out different shelters, on and off the streets, 5 years, 5 year circle around the mountain, and finally hit a place. Because for me, in my journey, when it came to housing, and it wasn't that I wasn't ever offered housing, I chose to refuse housing that would not accept my two children in the home with me. There are times when you have to let go of your plan so that God can work His plan that's better for you. And it's not easy. I mean, I stumbled, I fell, I screamed, I cried, I threw punches in the air, I cursed God out, cursed God in, cursed God out again, cursed God in, cursed God out again, because I did not want to take a place that would not take my children with me, or that they couldn't come and stay for any length of time. And those were the places that were being offered me, until finally I ended up at the Bridge Homeless Shelter about 3 years ago. About 3 years ago. I came from Austin Street. Oh, actually, I came from Salvation Army, got put out of Salvation Army because I stood up for a client, ended out on the street for a night, ended up in the hospital for a day, and then in Austin Street Shelter, and then at the Bridge. Well, at the Bridge is where I actually received the most assistance in guidance and encouragement when it came to how to really shore my foundation. And I owe a lot of credit to one case manager in particular, and I will be blessed to interview her soon. But she really helped me gain focus in that having a unit that covered me for the moment did not mean I would never see my children, did not mean that I wouldn't be able to bring them into the home. So she really, really fought for me to get my Section 8 voucher, which allowed me to get the unit that I'm currently dwelling in, that we're having this podcast conversation from right now. See, you have to gain a better perspective, not only from your point of view of what homeless is, but the person who's listening to this and you're going through homelessness, you have to take a point of perspective of what's going to help me right now get at least a corner of my foundation solid so I can step on it and shore the rest of my foundation and do it step by step. If you have children and right now you're only being able to get a unit that takes care of you, do that for right now. And even if you have to do a year, 6 months of just you, it helps get you together. You can get your finances together. You can get your mind right. You can get your soul right. You can fight for custody. Do whatever it is you have to do in order to make sure that those babies are covered. But if you're trying to cover yourself and you don't have the full foundations short, everybody's going to sink. And that was the point that she was really trying to make to me. It's like, you want to do this big thing, and that's courageous, and it's the right thing to do. But until you have these little few things, you're not going to be able to do that. You're going to end up right back in the same place, and your children are going to end up suffering more because you didn't prepare for their arrival. You just grabbed them. So I have learned how to sit still. I have learned how to be quiet. I have learned how to stop boxing the air. And I have really taken on a full-scale course of defending those who are homeless and defending those who serve the homeless, as well as trying to create community awareness of the connection between the two, because we really need to understand that we're more alike than we are different. And everybody, I don't care how rich you are, if you live in a mansion or if you live in a hut, everybody is one penny away from being homeless. You don't know where this economy is going to go. You don't know where your health is going to be from one moment to the next. And you cannot assume that because you're where you're standing that you'll always be there. Look at the people in paradise. Their homes burned to the ground. They never thought that they would be homeless. They were the rich elite. And here they are, homeless. Homeless. Their homes have been burned to a cinder in the ground. Few people made it out alive. They never thought one day that homelessness would be beating and burning down their door. Never, never, never thought they'd be faced with that opportunity. I'm going to say it's an opportunity. So they might see it as opposition, but it's really an opportunity to not only have understanding, but to do better, to gain a different perspective. So don't take it for granted that because you live in a multi-million dollar house or a $100,000 house or a $25,000 to $85,000 house, that house will always be yours. Foreclosures happen every day because people run into health challenges or a spouse dies, so they lose income. And maybe they depended upon that spouse to pay the bill, so they don't really know how to keep up with the paperwork, much less where it is. You find that a lot, where the woman was stay at home and the husband dies and she's left trying to handle what he handled, not knowing how he handled it. We really need to be very considerate of other people and what happens in life. Life throws you curveballs. It freight trains coming at you, and you just never know where it's going to go. So don't stay stuck on, I've got mine. They need to get theirs. They had theirs, because in order to be homeless, you had to have once had a home. I really need you to think about that. To be homeless, you had to once have had the first portion of that, a home. Nobody is brought into this world and they're instantaneously homeless unless they were born in the streets with someone who was already there. You know, and you really want to think about that. The way compassion works is that you give insight to what somebody else is going through. And even if you haven't had an addiction issue or you don't have a sex issue, or you don't have a mental health instability, or you're not living with HIV and AIDS, doesn't mean that you need to have less compassion for that person that's afflicted like that. It's not their choice. 99 times out of 100, it was not their choice to enter into prostitution. It was not their original design to become a pimp or a drug addict or an alcoholic or a cutter or a pedophile or schizophrenic or bipolar. You know, it wasn't their choice a lot of the time. Nobody really is born into this world saying, well, as they grow up, oh, I want to be a prostitute. Oh, I want to be a cokehead. I want to be a crackhead. Or I want to be an alcoholic. I want to be domestically abused by my significant other. You know, I want somebody to beat my face in every time I turn around. No one as a child consider those things as good things to be. We all want to be doctors and lawyers and astronauts and firemen. You know, we have good intentions with our lives, but then street happens. Life happens. Life happens. And we forget that when we see someone that's struggling with whatever issue they might be, they don't even have to be homeless for them to be struggling. But when we see somebody struggling, we tend to forget that that's another human being, and we need to treat that person with the same love and care as we do someone dealing with cancer or leukemia. You don't beat somebody up and blame them for having the cancer that they've got. No, we find compassion and we find empathy because they didn't plan for that. They didn't plan for that. Life happened. No one plans on being raped or sodomized. It happens. Nobody plans, you know, to have to make the choice to get an abortion. Life happens. Nobody, you know, wants to be out in the street begging. It happens. So we need to take a different approach to how we view people. And that's just a portion of my story, by the way. There's so much more and gladness, you know, to my story. That I've been through a struggle. I've been through many, many things. I've dealt with being molested as a child. I've dealt with being rejected by my mother. I understand what that's like. I understand what it's like to be abused by an alcoholic. I know what it's like to be beat up on. I know what it's like to be, I know what it's like to be called nigger to your face. And I never thought I'd ever hear that, you know, but things come at you, and it's not what comes at you, it's how you deal with the situation. And not everybody's able to deal with what comes at them, so they self-anesthetize to be numb through the situation because the pain is just too much to bear. And that's inclusive of your CEOs and your presidents and your politicians and your judges and your school teachers and the principals and the doctors, the lawyers, everybody. You know, whatever it is your station in life, you're still a human flesh and blood being with a heart beating in your chest and a big gray matter mush wedged between your ears. So we need to really do a better job of seeing the human in each of us. And that's not hard, because people do some very horrific things to one another. Some do it in the name of the Lord. Some do it in the name of love. Some do it in the name of hate. Some do it just because they see others and they want people to accept them. And they feel like, if I don't join in, then I won't be accepted, and I just want acceptance. I just want somebody to welcome me into their group. I want somebody to look at me and see me. I want to be noticed. I want to be known. I want to be felt. I want to be heard. And we miscommunicate a lot of our message because we get caught up in our emotions, and we get caught up in our perceptions and prejudices and our biases. You know, too many times we miss great opportunities because we can't see past color. because we can't see past religion, because we can't see past gender. We can't see people, and we refuse to see people. We refuse to hear because it doesn't match us. We want to see ourselves in other people, but we can't even see our own selves right. And that's the hardest part when you feel you're going through the toughest trial. You tend to beat up on yourself a lot. And we take that aggression out on other people because we don't want to abuse ourselves. And it's easier to hurt somebody else and walk away. So as I close this, the main thing I want you to take away from it is that everybody struggles. It might not be homelessness, but everybody struggles with something. And we need to take a stronger, deeper look at loving people for people, praying for people's redemption, praying for your redemption to love people better. That's my constant prayer because I have my own prejudices and biases. Yes, I do. As a black woman in this world, I have learned to just not like a whole lot of things, starting with myself. So while you go through your journey, while you listen to this broadcast, and though it may be long-winded and I may have gone off track several times, but in all of it, gain an understanding, and not just your understanding, but ask the Lord God above for his understanding on what you're really looking at before you cuss out that person that's on the corner panhandling. You know what? Ask them, baby, what can I really do? Do you need a job? Do you need counseling? Do you need directed to a shelter? Can I buy you a meal? You know, and yeah, a lot of people want drugs. They want alcohol, and that's why they ask for money. They really don't want food. And you help whatever way you can. Pray for that person. Don't cuss them out. They go through enough. The reason that they're on those drugs and on that alcohol is because they're trying to anesthetize something that has traumatized them to a level where they don't want to feel anymore. They just don't want to feel. Or they at least don't want to feel like a ratchet mess. So that's all I have for you guys today. And I pray you're having a blessed time. Please do share this message with other people. If you would like to sponsor one of our conversations, we will be more than happy to help you advertise your small business or your large business or your youth program, your ministry. If you'd like to be a guest on this podcast, by all means, just make sure that you email us. The email will be put in the description of this particular podcast, but reach out to us. Our ad rates are very reasonable, and we're always excited to talk to new guests who have something enlightening to bring in conversation. I love you with the love of the Lord. I pray that you are blessed and highly favored. And if you don't know you blessed and highly favored, I'm telling you right now, you are blessed and highly favored in the name of the Lord. So thank you, and you have a great one, y'all.